Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you very much. Nice to have you back with us, everybody. How are you? I am Doug Llewellyn. It's a pleasure to be with you, and we're excited today because we're going to be talking to an expert who helps determine what caused accidents. Accidents of almost every kind you can think of, whether it's a slip and a fall in someone's home, out on the street, or it's a vehicular accident of some sort. This gentleman knows a lot about what it's all about and what it's like to recreate the injury. You may not know it, but as astonishing as it sounds, the second leading cause of unintentional injury-related deaths are slips, falls, and car accidents, in that order. And tragically, thousands of people die in falls at home and at work and in vehicle crashes every year. Many of these devastating incidents result in very complex legal cases. And each party, obviously, is trying to prove their side of the case. It would be impossible to conclusively decide who's at fault if it weren't for the razor-sharp, on-point testimony of an expert witness. And that's what we have with us today. His name is Jason Young. Jason is based, his company, Advantage Forensics, is based in Toronto, Canada. He's the president and the founding partner of the firm. It's a forensic engineering firm, and he has been featured in the media all across Canada and on expert panels here in the U.S. for his vast knowledge of reconstructing collisions, also human factors and biomechanics. He is an expert forensic engineer, and as he puts it, he investigates collisions, he investigates biomechanics, and then all kinds of slips, trips, and falls, and unfortunate accidents that people get into on an almost daily basis that then result in court cases down the line. He can testify on slippery conditions, on vehicle speeds. They can recreate an accident and determine precisely the speed the automobile was going when the accident happened. He looks into things like injury fraud and on all kinds of factors contributing to accidents. It's really a fascinating study, and I think it's a fascinating business. Ultimately, his job is to assist the court by explaining the science and the engineering behind the case in clear-cut language that everybody, including the jury, will understand. So basically, that's what we're going to be exploring today, and I hope you're going to find it very interesting. Jason Young is with us. Again, he is the founding partner of the firm, and they're based in Toronto, Canada, and it's a delight to have Jason with us. Jason, welcome. Nice to have you with us today. How are you?
Thank you, Doug. Good afternoon. We're doing great here.
It's a pleasure to have you. I know it's a nice day in Toronto. I hope it's a nice day where everybody's listening, including me. It's a nice day here. So let's talk a little bit about what you do. I know your educational background is pretty doggone amazing. You have master's degrees in biomechanical engineering and a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. When you were going to school studying these issues, is this the kind of thing you thought you were headed into that you were going to be doing?
No, I had no idea I would go into forensics. I always wanted to do work in biomedical engineering of some sort. I knew that that's the target area I was heading towards. I didn't know exactly which area of biomedical engineering I would go towards. And in fact, there were very few options when I graduated at the time in Canada for biomedical engineers. Most of the opportunities were in the States. So I had to start off in manufacturing as a first job.
Well, how then did you get into this? How did Advantage Forensics come about, and your thorough knowledge in this whole field where, you know, you've come to be considered one of the great experts in your country as well as highly recognized here in the U.S. as well. How'd that happen?
So I saw an opportunity when I was in manufacturing to get back into this field. There was an opportunity in collision reconstruction and in computer simulations. Forensics at the time was relatively young, and this was a great chance for me to get back into a field that I had a lot of background in. I had a strong background in biomechanics, a strong background in computer simulations, and this was something that I thought this is right up my field. I love solving riddles and puzzles, and forensics is just a perfect match for the type of skills and interest that I had at the time. So I went ahead with it, and I've been doing it ever since. 20 years now with forensics.
You've been doing this now almost 20 years. Yeah, you've so far investigated over 2,000 claims for insurers, lawyers, municipalities, as well as the provincial government, including landmark successes for clients at trial in many, many high-profile criminal and tort cases. Let's go into what my assumption is. You get brought in by lawyers to begin on the case. That's how you get involved in the beginning. Would that be right?
That's right. We get called in either by the lawyers or by the insurers from the insurance company. The adjusters can call us in very early on the claim, or sometimes the lawyers will bring us in a little bit later. Either way, it's as the case is heading towards a trial.
You know, give me a typical example of a case you would handle. And I know you cover everything. It's slips and falls. Let's talk about that, slips and falls. Somebody falls, they slip at home, they break a leg, maybe they break something even more serious. How would that end up into a court case where you would be called in to consult and to do an investigation of what happened in that accident?
So there are a number of different areas we could get involved in. One of them would be slip resistance, checking how slippery a floor is, if it meets code or if it doesn't. Another area could be staircases. A lot of people fall on stairs, whether it's at home or at work or in recreational locations. And mm-hmm. you'd think that every staircase is built according to the building codes, but in fact, you'd be surprised to find out that most staircases have a variety of variations from building code because they're put together at the, at a moment that it's sometimes difficult to match the exact drawing, so that you get slight differences between the original intent of the architect and what's actually built. So we determine whether staircases meet code or not, and we often find variations that are directly related to the cause of the fall.
You know, I must tell you, you're dead on accurate there. I can tell you a perfect example. In my neighborhood, there's a house that recently came up for sale, and we went over to look at it. We went down the steps to look at the downstairs level, and the stairs were so steep and so narrow. I mean, normally a stair, I would assume, would have a 12-inch maybe step you'd stand on. These were like 8 inches, maybe even less. And my wife and I both said, you know, there's an accident for sure waiting to go down these stairs. You'd hate to live in a
yeah.
house like that. That's what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, you said it. It's really an accident waiting to happen. It's exactly the way you put it.
So in a case like that, stretch it out for me. Somebody slipped and fell on those stairs. You're trying to figure out if the stairs were right or not. Would that end up in a lawsuit against the original builder of that house? Or
yeah,
what? What
yes.
would be typical?
Yeah, they could sue the builder. They could sue the architect. They could sue the property manager if it's a commercial property. And,
yeah.
you know, the court doesn't know what to do with a case like that because the judge is an expert in law. And the judge is an expert in assessing if witnesses are telling the truth or not. But the judge is not an expert in the building code. So that's where the expert witness comes in to help assist the court determining what are the scientific or engineering facts and what are the standards and codes that apply to a specific case and whether there was any deficiencies. And then the judge and jury can make their decision about what to do with the case.
You know, we see on television cases like this all the time where lawyers are attempting to trip up witnesses on the witness stand. I know in your education in college you were never trained to be an expert witness to go through a court case and be, grilled by an attorney. But I'm sure you've had that happen now in your career. How do you handle that? How do you prepare for it?
That's definitely one of the tricks of the trade. You're right. In university, you do not get any training on being an expert witness. In fact, it's really on-the-job training that we do, and we send out all of our experts here for expert witness training. We train them on chief examination, on cross-examination, on getting qualified in court. We train them on how they present in front of a judge or in a jury. There's different techniques to attempt, whether it's a judge trial or whether it's a jury trial. All of that has nothing to do with science and engineering. It's that those soft skills of being a presenter in court and being able to present with a strong level of confidence that will convince the judge and jury that you know what you're talking about, you've done your homework, and these are the findings, and you're sure about it.
That's a very good answer, but you're absolutely right. That's you can only prepare for that by on-the-job training, really, I guess. First couple of times, it can be very nerve-wracking, I would assume. You're talking about what your company does. Your company is called Advantage Forensic. Explain what you do. How do you describe your company? I know you're highly experts. Give me your definition of the company.
Sure. So we're a forensic engineering firm. We have experts in many different areas of engineering, civil engineering, mechanical engineering, biomedical engineering, materials engineering, and each expert has different niche areas that they specialize in. So as a whole, we investigate collisions, we investigate falls, we investigate sports accidents, we investigate floods and fires, we investigate material and product failures. Those are very interesting because those are products that you use every day at home that you might be familiar with that sometimes fail and or aren't used in the way they're supposed to be used, and someone ends up suing for large amounts of money, and they may be right. You know, the product may not meet standards, it may be have failed in a way that it shouldn't have, and sometimes it's completely the individual's fault, and it's an issue of human factors where the person did not use the product in the way that they were supposed to, and they didn't follow the instructions and warnings, and the defendant has a very strong case and the plaintiff has no case.
Wow. It really does sound very interesting. Well, let's take these in different sections and talk to me a little bit about some examples that you've had to investigate and how it turned out. When you talk about sports accidents, I assume we're talking about, professional sports, could be football, soccer, whatever, on the field. How would you get involved in a sports accident case?
So we've done trampoline cases. We've done hockey cases. We've done soccer cases. We've done cases involving wrestling. We have ski cases and snowboard cases. Those come up all the time. And these are cases where people are usually doing recreational sports as opposed to professional sports. And they get injured on the field. And then there's either an issue with the facility or the safety equipment or the sports equipment itself. And we're called in to take a look at it and see how it performed. For example, you've got people on wrestling mats and someone gets a concussion from being thrown to the floor. So the question in a case like that is, did the mat meet the standards for the wrestling industry to provide a safe enough surface? And it's just a question that the person was thrown hard to the ground on their head. There's nothing that they can do about it. Or is it a question that it's a deficiency in the mat and it didn't meet the standards. And these standards are very rigorous in all sports. They're very well-developed standards in each sport, specific to the safety requirements of each individual need. So in wrestling, there's a certain absorption level that the mat has to have because it's foreseeable and it's intended that people are going to be thrown to the floor, so it has to absorb a certain amount of energy.
So do you then go in and take that mat and do an analysis of it?
Exactly. We'll test the mat, and we'll compare it to the North American standards and see if it meets it or if it doesn't.
Well, that's a pretty interesting example of what you were talking about.
The lawyers don't know what to make of the case because they have a plaintiff who is severely injured. The damages are significant. Maybe the person's paralyzed. The question is there a finger to point the blame at, or is there not? And the lawyers and judges and jury, there's no way that they can answer that question. Everyone knows the person was thrown to the floor. Everyone knows that there's a concussion or a paralysis or whatever the injury may be. But the question is, has anyone tested these particular maths to see if they meet code?
And if it didn't meet code, you would assume then it would be the facility that that sponsored the match that would be on the hook for that? Would that be right?
Yeah, or the manufacturer.
Or college? Yeah.
Or the manufacturer. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that's really where we come in to answer these questions of science and engineering and physics that everyone just scratches their head and says, I don't know. We try to answer those questions.
I know one of the most technical areas you get into is recreation of motor vehicle accidents. Let's talk about that a little bit and what you're able to determine, after you're called in to investigate an accident. I would assume most of the time the automobiles have been removed from the location where the accident happened. I could be wrong, but that's my guess. How do you then go about recreating the situation to try and find out, who was at fault?
That is a great question. We get asked that question all the time in court. So we often go to the scrap yards and get into the car that was destroyed and measure it up. We measure up the crush damage. We go inside the car and we check the data recorder. All vehicles have data recorders that, in a collision, record a certain amount of information for maybe 5 seconds before the collision. And we download that and we analyze that data. We look at the skid marks from the scene that the police measured, and we'll get the entire police file. We will look at the injuries and see what kind of forces are required to cause those kinds of injuries. And then the fun part starts. Then we start putting it all together. And that takes a lot of computer simulation and a lot of math and a lot of physics. There's a case that we just testified about. I just testified a few weeks ago. And it was a multi-vehicle collision on a freeway, so it was a pretty big collision. And, the lawyers were both arguing about what speed the driver was going. Was it going 130? Was it going 150? Was it going 120? It's a nighttime collision. And I came in and testified about my findings, how fast the car was going, and the jury was listening. And then the lawyer asked me a great question. One lawyer said, how do you know that? You weren't there. And that's fine. But then the other lawyer asked a fantastic question. He said, Mr. Young, how many hours did it take you to solve this collision? And I told the jury, I spent 40 hours of straight math solving this collision. And after I answered that, it was a different jury. They saw that this is not hand-waving business and magic that we do. It's serious work, and it's a lot of investigation, and it's a lot of math to find out who zigged and who zagged and line up all of the evidence and all of the collision damage and use all of the laws of physics to find out speeds and where the cars were, whose fault it was. And a big question is opportunity to avoid. Could the driver avoid the collision? At the end of the day, could the driver avoid it or not? That's really the big question that it comes down to.
Seems to me that's very difficult when you're working after the fact. The vehicles have been moved. You can certainly examine a vehicle in a junkyard, and examine it there. But, boy, you're right. That's a lot of work that goes on. By the way, you mentioned talking about a data recorder in an automobile. We're all used to hearing about airplane accidents, and we're waiting for the black box to give us the information. I didn't know automobiles had any kind of device like that. Do they really?
Every single car in North America that has an airbag system has a black box that it will record data in the event of a serious collision.
And what kind of data does it record? What can you get? What information can you get?
So it varies depending on the generation of the vehicle. The older ones will have maybe speed at impact and the severity of the collision, and that's it, and whether the driver was belted. The newer ones have tons of data. I've seen a download that we took from a Corvette that had 47 pages of data. That was unbelievable. That was the biggest download we've ever seen. 47 pages of steering data for more than 5 seconds. Impact speeds for 5 seconds. Speeds for 5 seconds before impact. whether the cruise control is on, whether any of the safety systems were activated, like a steering stabilizer system or anything like that. All of that data was included within the download. So it really varies by vehicle, and it's getting better and better.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have never heard that discussed before. I had no idea that kind of information was available.
It might take away our jobs one day.
Well, that's totally amazing to know. I can see how helpful that can be. What about floods and fires and things of that nature? They're also very difficult to discover, to recreate, to find out what was the cause of a fire. Well, flood, you know what caused the flood, but what are you looking for in a flood issue?
Well, those aren't my areas of expertise, so I'm not going to have great answers for you. In floods, you're generally looking for what caused the water leakage. It's often a leaky fridge, a leaky toilet, and you're looking at the parts to see if they failed or how they failed or why they failed. And in fires, you're looking for the point of origin, and then you're looking for the cause. So there's origin and cause. Where did this fire start, and then what started the fire?
Well, that explains it. When you're talking about floods, I was thinking, the river overflows and the house gets flooded. You know what the cause was.
We get cases where $1 million houses and $2 million houses get damaged because a 25-cent part in a toilet wasn't designed properly, and all of the toilets with this kind of part from overseas are failing and causing damage and flooded bathrooms, which, if it's at an upstairs and no one's home, it's going to destroy the wood in the entire house.
Tell me about what do you think is one of your most interesting cases that you've been working on? I know you've worked on tons of them, but some can be more complex and involve a lot more work than others. You may have already told me about one of them, but how would you describe one particular one that kind of drove you bats until you could figure out what you were trying to find? How would you answer?
How much time do we have? We have 2,500 cases.
No, you got another 5 minutes here.
Oh, 5 minutes, that much. Okay. So there was this great case that I had involving a fall through a hole in an upstairs during a renovation. There was a person that was renovating their upstairs floor, and the facts that were known was that a visitor came over to the house, and they found her at the bottom of the stairs, and she had fractured her spine. She said that there was a hole in the floor upstairs in the renovation area that she was looking at, because she was they were showing her the renovation, and that she fell through the floor straight down to the main floor. And the owners said, no, that's ridiculous. There was no hole in the floor whatsoever. She fell down the stairs, and it's her fault. So there was experts on both sides of this case, and we looked at the biomechanics of her injury. The injury showed that she had sustained forces going straight up through the body in a vertical direction, like upwards from the feet, straight through the back. So the biomechanics told us that she had fallen through the hole and landed exactly the way she said. If she had fallen down the stairs, she would have different injuries. But the other side was adamant that it wasn't true. And they had witnesses that said that there was no hole in the floor. And by the time we got to there, it was already patched up. We did find, this was amazing, this is what I love about forensics, we did find a certain board right above the area of the fall that was cut out, and it was a different color, and it had different nails, and it had been put in separately. So we did see that there was a hole there at some point that was patched up. Anyway, this fight between the experts went on for years, with many reports back and forth. The other experts disagreed with the biomechanics, and she had osteoporosis, so they said that some of the findings were maybe didn't apply to a person like that. In the end, after 5 years of back and forth, the owner of the house had to testify when it got to court, and she wasn't willing to testify, and she admitted that everything she had said in the last 5 years had been a total lie. She fabricated the whole thing. The lady fell through the floor exactly the way she said, and we were right, the other experts were wrong. And it was really very satisfying to see that the math and the science works, and it's, you know, that the findings were correct, and it was, all of that hard work was justified. That was a great case.
What happened to the woman who lied, the homeowner?
She is in big trouble.
She's in big trouble
with her insurance company. Her insurance company is not happy with her. They are very.
You know, they're
taking a non-coverage position.
I was just going to say it's interesting because a lot of these cases can involve millions and millions of dollars of damages, especially,
yeah.
I would assume, if there are cases where you have these multiple car accidents, are there five or six or even more car accidents or cars piled up as a result of one accident. That then gets very difficult to recreate, doesn't it?
If you've ever watched CSI, it's like Grissom used to say, we follow the evidence,
right.
And it's true. You know, that may be a TV show, but in reality, you know, when you're really doing forensic work, you do follow the evidence, and you test the evidence, and you test your theories, and you go where the evidence tells you, and you give very little weight to witness statements unless the evidence shows that those witness statements are true. And when you put it all together, those are your findings, and you stick to it.
Do you spend much of your time looking at computer scans and doing work on computers, or are you examining photos of results and situations to try and recreate your reenactment? How do you work primarily?
Well, it's both. We do a lot of computer work. Much of that computer work is simulations. We have advanced computer software that when you put all of the evidence into that software package, you can then run simulations and try different theories until you get a matching result. And when you get a matching result, then you can test your findings and see if any small changes will result in differences. And you can keep testing it until you've got a really good match of your evidence, and then those are your findings. So we use computer simulations all the time. And it's hours and hours of work. And it's very helpful with the math, because we're talking about very detailed math that would be very difficult to do by hand.
Well, I'm amazed at what you do. I think you're in a very, very amazing industry or business, and I think it would be very, very challenging, no question about it. Jason Young is our guest. He's the founding partner of Advantage Forensics. It's a forensic engineering firm based in Toronto. How would you describe your firm compared to others in your field? What would you say is different about Advantage Forensics?
Well, one thing that we have that other companies don't have is we have worldwide recognized expertise in nighttime collisions. I've written a number of papers and done some research in nighttime collisions that is leading edge. We have done nighttime reenactments on roads in the middle of the night that are so complex and difficult to arrange that most other firms in the world won't even attempt them. We've placed tractor trailers, moving trucks, skateboards, bicycles, you name it. We've placed it on the road at night in safe ways, essentially doing very dangerous work in a safe way to find out exactly what would a driver see in this situation, and was this person or skateboard or bicyclist visible or not visible.
It sounds really amazing. I guess you really love what you do. It's obvious you trained well for this, and you're coming.
Thank you. I'm very fortunate and blessed. I'm very fortunate and blessed to be able to say that I do something that I love. It's a great thing to be able to say, and a good message to people out there that the young generation, that if you can find a job or field that you love to do, then you may work hard every day of your life, but you'll never work a day in your life.
Jason, that's so great. Your website, by the way, is aforensics.ca, aforensics.ca. If you want to learn more about Jason's company and get in touch with him, that's where to go to do it. Jason, thank you. It's really been a delight having you as a guest, and I have learned a lot on this, and I love that. Thank you for being with us. It's been wonderful.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time. Till then, take care. Be safe. Bye for now.